Now we come at noon.
Please be seated.
Okay, we've had a little change in the drill this morning over what we thought it was going to be for argument, and so I want to go through it to be sure that we all are on the same page. We're going to start out with Mr. McLaughlin for 25 minutes, okay, and I understand you're appearing pro hoc vice and you already have your privileges in place, or are you going to be moving him now? Okay, all right. And then Attorney Nider, you will be for 25 minutes. Attorney Frankie for 5 minutes, and then back to you, Attorney McLaughlin. Are we all square? All right. Are you set to proceed? Please do.
May it please the Court. The Court of Appeals erred by holding that whenever a foreign corporation complies with Wisconsin's mandatory business registration statute by appointing a registered agent to accept service of process, it implicitly consents to general jurisdiction and becomes subject to suit here on any claim, regardless of whether the claim has any connection to Wisconsin. The decision is contrary to the text and purpose of the registration statute. It's contrary to Wisconsin's statutory framework governing personal jurisdiction, which uniformly distinguishes between service of process and grounds for personal jurisdiction. It is contrary to principles of personal jurisdiction by consent. And as every appellate court nationwide to address this issue, except the Court of Appeals below, has ruled, it is contrary to the U.S. Supreme Court's most recent pronouncements on the due process limits of general jurisdiction. The straightforward question of statutory interpretation here is answered by the plain meaning of clear statutory text. Sections 180.1507 and 1510 of the BCL require foreign corporations to appoint a registered agent for service of process in order to qualify to transact business. Section 1510 is really the most on-point provision relied on by the Court of Appeals, and it states that the registered agent is the foreign corporation's agent for service of process, notice or demand required or permitted by law to be served on the foreign corporation. The registration statutes do not mention personal jurisdiction at all. They refer only to service of process.
What about 180.1505, sub 2? That pertains to, and I'll speak generically, that a foreign corporation has the same rights and privileges and same duties and restrictions and liabilities. Even though there is no express reference to personal jurisdiction, is that not an avenue for the same duties, restrictions, liabilities as domestic corporations' rights and privileges?
We submit, Your Honor, that it is not. The provision you just identified does not say anything about jurisdiction, obviously, and nothing in the long-arm statute where Wisconsin has decided to place personal jurisdiction adopts that interpretation. And plaintiffs haven't cited any case law or statute which supports the idea that amenability to jurisdiction is a duty or a liability within the meaning of the business corporation law. And we note in our reply brief that that view has been rejected elsewhere as inconsistent with the similar statutes, which are really generally everywhere. But more importantly, the idea that personal jurisdiction is a duty or liability has no support, because it really isn't that. Jurisdiction, or the right not to be subject to jurisdiction as appropriate, is a central aspect of the liberty interest guaranteed by the Due Process Clause.
You mentioned, counsel, statutes in other jurisdictions, and both sides have what I would call a plethora of cases saying, yes, they went one way, and no, they went the other way. But one of the arguments advanced is, look, our statute is based on the ABA Model Code. And the ABA Model Code and its comments specifically indicate that jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction, is accomplished upon the appointment of a registered agent.
Fair enough, Your Honor. 33 years ago, the ABA commentary, a third party, issued that statement. A couple of observations as it pertains here. First of all, it cannot alter the plain meaning of unambiguous statutory text. Secondly, there is no evidence anywhere that the Wisconsin legislature considered, let alone decided to adopt this third-party commentary, which is, frankly, decades out of step with modern jurisdiction law. And this court said in the Juneau City decision that statements from non-legislative sources, where you have to kind of get a ripple effect into the distance, as somebody very cleverly said, it's like going to a party and looking over the guests looking for
a
friend.
I saw that clever comment.
I liked that.
I did too, but I want to just observe that most of the justices on this court have done that very thing. And I'm not talking about the party. I'm talking about making reference to committee notes and commentary.
Certainly it's appropriate in some situations if the language is ambiguous. Here, where the plain language makes no mention of jurisdiction at all, and other courts, such as the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in the Brown case, which we obviously cite quite a bit, construed very similar language to Wisconsin statute in applying Connecticut statute, which was also patterned on the Model Act, and they squarely rejected AMBAC's proposed construction. But in any event, it's worth noting finally that the ABA commentary only says that a foreign corporation is amenable to suit for claims arising out of its in-state activities within the purview of its certificate of authority. And this is a distinction which you see time and again in the case law, going back, frankly, to the Supreme Court's decision in the Robert Mitchell Furniture decision. This court picked up on it in the Aetna decision, which I'll be turning to in a moment because it's so heavily relied on by AMBAC, that the default rule under Wisconsin and every other law that I'm aware of is that these kinds of registration statutes should only be viewed as pertaining to the in-state of activities of a corporation that are really, frankly, now addressed by the long-arm statute, because so many of these historical vestiges, you know, you have to kind of struggle to fit them into today's modern era. But turning back just briefly to the registration statute, nothing in it states, implies, or otherwise gives notice that by registering to transact business, a foreign corporation agrees to be subject to suit here on any and all claims. Now, Wisconsin statutes prescribe proper service of process as an essential and separate condition to initiating a lawful proceeding. Section 801.04 of the long-arm statute is really perfectly clear. It specifies two absolute and separate conditions to a valid judgment. Number one, in the words of the statute, there exists one or more of the jurisdictional grounds set forth in sections 801, 05, and 6. And in addition, the statute says, a summons is served upon the person pursuant to section 801.11. Now, the long-arm provision, section 801.05, reiterates that separate role of service by enumerating numerous circumstances under which personal jurisdiction obviously is available, and it says over a person served in an action pursuant to 801.11. And if you take a look at 801.11.5, it interlocks quite nicely. It specifies how a summons may be served on a corporation, including on an agent authorized by appointment or by law, similar kind of language, to accept service of the summons for the defendant, for instance, under section 180.1510. So the appointment of a registered agent simply is an efficient procedural mechanism to provide notice through service of process and to perfect jurisdiction that is authorized under the long-arm statute and due process. We freely admit that there are registration statutes, such as Pennsylvania's, that specifically authorize general jurisdiction and notify foreign corporations that registration equals consent. Wisconsin statute simply is not one of them. As I mentioned a moment ago, unlike 180.1507 and 10, other statutes in Chapter 801 would have an unmistakable consistency across multiple provisions, showing that under Wisconsin law, grounds for jurisdiction and service of process, or the means of notice, are separate. And they give meaning to 180.1510's reference to service of process required or permitted by law. 80105 enumerates in 13 subparts when a Wisconsin court has personal jurisdiction over a person. No mention of business registration. 801.052 authorizes personal jurisdiction when a Wisconsin special jurisdiction statute, quote, specifically confers grounds for personal jurisdiction. And Wisconsin statutes, again, are remarkably consistent. They are explicit when requiring that a party consent to personal jurisdiction as a condition of doing business. Seems like foreign insurers get singled out a lot. For example, Section 617.115 requires every insurer that's authorized to do business here to submit to the Commissioner of Insurance a statement from specified affiliates to the effect that the affiliate, quote, agrees to be subject to the jurisdiction of the courts of this state. They know what they're doing when they intend to submit someone to jurisdiction. The same is in Section 648.453 for affiliates of healthcare management organizations.
Is your position then the reason there's no personal jurisdiction is that the actions of your client do not fall within the criteria of 80105?
Yes, Your Honor, and we argued that before some of the grounds were advanced before Judge Anderson, and he rejected all of them, and it's our position that they are not properly preserved before this court.
Okay.
But ultimately, then...
So we don't have to look at that statute at all?
Section 801?
So 80105 is what I was looking at.
I think the answer to the issue here is in the registration statute of the BCL, but I believe that a cross-reference, if you will, to the jurisdiction statutes to sort of confirm that there's no other provision in the jurisdiction statutes providing or provides a reasonable basis to conclude.
So what you're saying is the statute they focus on is silent and the ones they needed they can't use.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And there's additional confirmation for this framework in Section 801.06, and I hope to move out of this 801 shortly.
You move out of it, I just want to pick up on what was just said. The ones they focus on are silent, and the ones they need, they can't use. I don't, as I read your opponent's brief, and I think page 26, I can't remember exactly. Yes, page 26. They take issue with the application of 80105, 80106, and your arguments about the application of 80104, and say this, Countrywide's analysis suffers from a fatal flaw, vis-a-vis citing to the 801 statutes. It presumes that these statutes provide an exhaustive enumeration of means by which Wisconsin courts can obtain personal jurisdiction. Goes on then quoting from the Kohler case, saying, in Wisconsin, courts may obtain personal jurisdiction over a party through any one or more of the grounds stated in Wisconsin's long-arm statute or by consent. So that has me a little perplexed. I thought you were the one that's relying on 80104, 5, 6, and 11.
Yeah, I think they're trying to suggest that there's something there that is not. We are relying on 801, 4, 5, and 6 as clearly providing that those are the exhaustive grounds for personal jurisdiction by statute. And even 801.06 addresses with specificity the limited circumstances in which courts may exercise jurisdiction without service of a summons. And there are two circumstances that the Wisconsin legislature determined is appropriate, and they're based on implied consent. So we'll start with implied consent, and they are exhaustive. They say, obviously, as to a counterclaim asserted against a party who commenced litigation here, they're amenable to jurisdiction by doing that, and where a party appears in a suit and by its conduct waives the jurisdiction defense. Again, that's 801.06, and there is no mention of business consent jurisdiction, business of consent to jurisdiction. And no one disputes that parties, and I think this is what their argument is getting at. We don't dispute that a party can voluntarily consent to jurisdiction in a particular forum. Any one of us can make a sign a contract making clear that we consent to be sued somewhere. That's an intentional relinquishment of a known right, the definition of waiver. Daimler even recognized as much. But that is very different than deriving implied consent from the administrative act of registering to transact business and designating the required local agent to accept service of process. And the reason is this. The hallmark of consent to personal jurisdiction is a knowing and voluntary and express choice to waive the due process right to contest jurisdiction. Consent and waiver have been called really two sides of the same coin. And as the circuit court, Judge Anderson noted here, when a party agrees to a forum selection clause, it signs a contract indicating it understands exactly what it's agreeing to, and it submits as to a particular dispute with a particular plaintiff. That simply can't be said about registration, where the act that AMBAC says constitutes consent is filing state-mandated paperwork that doesn't indicate in any way.
Didn't Judge Cardozo say just the opposite in the, is it the Niedbo case, N-E-I-D-B-O?
Niedbo, I believe.
Yes.
But that might, well, that might have been Justice Breyer.
He said, on the Pennsylvania case,
yeah,
that indeed what you have here is a contract. It's part of the bargain, he says. And he says, if I recall correctly, God rest his soul, he says the stipulation, that is to have a registered agent and be able to do business in a particular forum. The stipulation is therefore a two contract. The person designated is the true agent. The consent that he shall represent the corporation is real consent. The contract deals with jurisdiction of the person. It does not enlarge or diminish jurisdiction of subject matter. It means that whenever jurisdiction of the subject matter is present, service on the agent shall give jurisdiction of the person. I found that interesting because you mentioned contract, and here is Cardozo saying this is the essence of contract, the benefit of the bargain.
Well, all these decisions, I think the Second Circuit, I direct the Court's attention to the Second Circuit's analysis of these decisions, which came out and said they cannot, when I say they, I mean Pennsylvania Fire, Niedbo, cannot be divorced from what it called the outdated jurisprudential assumptions of its era. Those cases, Pennsylvania Fire was decided 100 years ago under the era of Penoyer v. Neff, where the physical presence of the defendant within the state was an absolute requirement to personal jurisdiction.
Have those cases ever been overruled, however?
Essentially, yes. They're not being followed. The court, the Second Circuit, said we're not following it. The Delaware Supreme Court said we're not following it. A bunch of others said we're not following it.
But those are Supreme Court cases, so.
Well, they've been given authorization. The U.S. Supreme Court in Daimler, the U.S. Supreme Court, obviously, like any court of last resort, moves with, you know, it's careful in its sweeping aways. So the way Justice Ginsburg dealt with these outdated decisions was to say, in classic understatement, they should not attract heavy reliance today. Those are her words. And the reason for that is this. As Brown points out, in the 19th century, a corporation was deemed present only in its state of incorporation. So this Penoyer territorial-bound notion of jurisdiction prohibited the assertion of jurisdiction if your company was doing business in the state. So state registration statutes first appeared in the 19th century, and their entire premise was to manufacture consent and presence in the state through presence of an agent under the Penoyer framework. But as the U.S. Supreme Court noted in the Burnham case, Justice Scalia's opinion, in which we cited, that consent and presence were purely fictional. And even under that former approach, the statutes were understood to create local jurisdiction for claims arising from transactions within the state, what's now known as specific jurisdiction, not the general jurisdiction that the Court of Appeals here found. So Burnham said in 1945, International Shoe, quote, cast those fictions aside, that's at page 618, and announced that due process now turns on a defendant's contacts with the forum. And in Schaffer v. Heitner, they made the point even more strongly. Quote, all assertions of state court jurisdiction must be evaluated according to the standards of international shoe, and to the extent that prior decisions are inconsistent with this standard, they are overruled. That's the words of the Supreme Court in Schaffer v. Heitner. So court after court and numerous scholars have recognized that Pennsylvania Fire and Nirbo predate the modern era of due process jurisdiction, and after International Shoe, the focus shifted to whether the defendant's been served within the state and to the defendant's purposeful contacts with the state and whether they justify the assertion of jurisdiction.
What's your client's purposeful contacts with the state, of Wisconsin?
Frankly, they're, as Judge Anderson noted, they're close to zero.
How many mortgages have you written in this state?
Have been written in this state?
Yeah. I've written on property in this state.
Well, there are certainly going to be many. I don't have the number with me, but they're all pre-
10?
Probably dozens and scores, maybe more.
Hundreds?
Possibly. But
so
they all...
Your company has written hundreds of mortgages on real estate in this state. Is that purposeful contacts with the state?
No, Your Honor. Under Daimler, it's not. Two things. First of all, they all happened pre-2008. They have not commenced any foreclosure proceedings since 2014.
All right. But before 2008, how many they've written hundreds of mortgages on the property?
So there's two kinds of jurisdiction, right? There's general jurisdiction.
Absolutely.
Daimler says no. Only the principal place of business and the.
So we're back place. Back to incorporation, state of incorporation.
State of incorporation.
Principal place of business.
How
many principal places of business can Countryside have?
Under Daimler, there are only two, absent what it called exceptional circumstances, which have never been found by the U.S. Supreme Court outside of the Perkins v. Benjouette case. So here, for general jurisdiction, we don't dispute that there is general jurisdiction over Countrywide in California and New York, which is where New York is its principal place of business, New York is its place of incorporation. California is its principal place of business. And as to specific jurisdictions, the claim does not arise clearly out of any mortgage activity
pre-2008. Your position is that, as a matter of a due process, this nationwide entity, anyone who has a gripe against it can only sue in New York and California.
Yes.
Every plaintiff has to go to New York and California.
No. If there is specific jurisdiction...
I understand that, but for...
Any plaintiff, yes. Any plaintiff has certainty. Both the defendant has certainty and the plaintiff has certainty. As the Supreme Court said, general jurisdiction is now a safety valve.
But if there were a claim that arose out of one of the mortgages that you wrote for Wisconsin property, that could be proceeded on here under specific jurisdiction?
If it's not time-barred and a mortgagor, yes, had a problem, yeah, I suppose they could bring a claim themselves. But the claim here is one of fraudulent inducement.
Doesn't fit. Okay.
So I see that my yellow light is on.
Emphasis on here. I have two concerns. Number one, it seems like what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And you have used Wisconsin courts hundreds of times, in excess of 100 times for foreclosing mortgages. I wrote an opinion where you appeared just a couple of years ago. You've appeared in Court of Appeals cases. So how can you say, yes, in all of those cases, we'll use the Wisconsin court system, but if people want to sue us, in this context, maybe not so. It just there's a certain fairness or symmetry that seems to be missing. Using the court system when you want to, but not using it, allowing it to be used against you.
Well, no, Your Honor. We respectfully submit that that's not the case. We submit that, for example, AMBAC has pressed the rehabilitation proceeding in which Countrywide filed an objection. And obviously the jurisdiction inquiry is about our conduct in Wisconsin, not AMBAC's. And if we appeared in a proceeding, that would be a consent to jurisdiction in that proceeding. But the case law is very clear on this. The Achille-Lauro decision that we cited, I think, is the leading case in the nation on this, that submission to jurisdiction is case-specific. There is no good for the gander principle for purposes of submission. And I think, frankly, that's quite consistent with what Section 806 says in specifying that when you voluntarily appear in a proceeding, you are submitting to jurisdiction.
It seems to me, though, it's inconsistent with 180.15.10. When you appoint an agent, it's for service of process. To me, a common sense hearing of that, but also cases say the same thing. When you have an agent for service of process, that means to sue and be sued. That's what the cases say, but it also looks kind of plain meaning, too.
Well, I would point your honors back to your Stroop v. Career Academy decision, where this court said it was perfectly clear that Wisconsin law, in the words of the court, emphasizes the distinction between the means of notice, i.e. service of the summons, and the grounds for exercising personal jurisdiction. Service alone, Stroop holds, even if proper, doesn't confer jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant corporation. The court said grounds for personal jurisdiction, as provided and enumerated in the statute, must be present. And the Supreme Court has agreed with that proposition. But ultimately, the key to Daimler is its determination that due process prohibits a state from subjecting a foreign corporation to general jurisdiction merely because it does business there. Daimler repeatedly emphasized that it was ending the notion that a corporation is subject to general jurisdiction in every state in which it does business. AMBAC's theory would permit this court in Wisconsin to take a more sweeping view of general jurisdiction and was found unconstitutional in Daimler and allow the state to exercise general jurisdiction as long as the foreign corporation did any business at all, which is the trigger for a registration requirement. So,
but Daimler did not involve consent.
No, it was not specifically a consent decision. It was a classic. I see my time is up, ma'am.
Well, you may finish the answer. Yeah.
And here's my follow-up on that, which may sound a little strange to you, but the court has for a couple of years now been inundated with drunk driving cases. And they involve consent. You drive on the highways of Wisconsin as well as the highways of the other 49 states. Most of the states, if not all of them, have rules. You consent to a blood test. And the issue is that real consent? And that's the issue you're presenting today. Is the registration...
Yeah, in a way, that's right.
That's right.
It
exactly.
Is the issue.
And the courts say, well, is it real consent or isn't it? Real consent, and is it revocable consent, and does it have to be revocable to make it real consent? Real consent being non-voluntary, intelligent, et cetera.
I think the important distinction there is really it goes back to the specific jurisdiction versus general jurisdiction distinction, because you're submitting to a blood test which arises out of your activity in the state, you're driving drunk in the state. The position here is that, as Judge Anderson said, someone in Hawaii can come in and sue you in Wisconsin for something that has nothing to do
That has nothing to do with the case. The cases as to whether it's in Wisconsin or not. It has to do with the concept of consent.
Yeah, but what are you consenting to, right? The question is derived from the statute.
Consenting to a significant invasion of your body against that is guaranteed free from invasion by the U.S. Constitution.
Right. And I suspect that the courts have articulated a compelling state interest that pertains to the safety of the Wisconsin residents, which has no overlap or bearing or relationship with allowing someone from Hawaii to come here and sue on claims unrelated to...
Well, anyway, it's an interesting comparison.
It is. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You ready to proceed?
May it please the court. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Barbara Niter, and I'm here today representing AMBAC Assurance Corporation, and I'm also arguing on behalf of the segregated account. when a foreign corporation takes the affirmative step of registering to transact business in Wisconsin, it consents to the general jurisdiction of the Wisconsin courts. That's been the law in Wisconsin for decades, but Countrywide now wants you to change that law because it doesn't want to be sued here. There is no reason to upend the settled meaning of Wisconsin's registration statute. The Court of Appeals correctly rejected Countrywide's attempt to escape from the bargain it made with this state when it sought and obtained a certificate of authority to transact business here. I'd like to address some of the points that counsel for Countrywide made. I'm sure you have questions, but let me just start with addressing the issue that counsel started out with when he talked about how this consent is an implied consent. It's not. It's an actual consent, and I think that's a very important distinction. As Justice Bradley pointed out, that point was made by Justice Cardozo in the Bagdon decision that was decided when he was with the New York Court of Appeals. And he talked about how it's an actual consent. And that language was quoted by the court in Pennsylvania Fire, and that's the United States Supreme Court, in its decision in 1917. And this concept that, you know, we don't have an actual waiver because it needs to be voluntary, well, the United States Supreme Court has set that straight as well in the Pennsylvania Fire case. And what it said there was that the execution of this contract, this document that is essentially a contract when you apply for a certificate of authority, that execution, and I quote, was the defendant's voluntary act. So when Countrywide came to Wisconsin and asked for this certificate of authority, it gave actual consent, not simply implied consent.
Ms. Snyder, one of the arguments of Countrywide is that it would be unconstitutional to require consent in order to come into the state and do some business.
It is one of their arguments, but they're wrong. And they're wrong because that question has been answered by the United States Supreme Court, not once, but several times. And I would direct your attention to the Pennsylvania Fire decision, again, that was decided by that court in 1917. Again, let me refer to the text of that decision because I think it's very helpful on this point. The court says that the construction that it was putting on the Missouri statute there, and it was the Missouri registration statute, it put the same construction on that statute as we're urging here, and that is that was consent to jurisdiction in Missouri. And the court said that construction, quote, did not deprive the defendant of due process of law, even if it took the defendant by surprise. That's the point here, and that same decision, that same principle was carried forward again by the United States Supreme Court when it issued its decision in the Nirbo case a couple of decades later. When you consent, when you enter into that voluntary act of consenting to jurisdiction by registering to do business in a state, that is constitutional, and there's no need for any additional due process analysis.
But what effect then is 801.054? What effect is that? Why do we even need that if what you're telling us is correct, the long-arm statute?
You're looking at
801.05, personal jurisdiction.
Let me make sure I'm on the same page.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
801.05 sub 4?
Yeah, sub
4. Local injury?
Or any of the other subsections.
Well, again, Countrywide makes the mistake of assuming that the procedural statute set forth all the ways that one can be subjected to jurisdiction in this state, and that's just wrong. Countrywide concedes that you can subject yourself to jurisdiction via contract, for example.
Well,
and I would challenge them to find that in this section, and it's not there. And that's the point here. You've got a separate section of the statutes, and that's the Chapter 180 registration statutes that deal with that.
Depending on what the contract says, but often contracts where you consent to jurisdiction, it's for a particular defendant and a particular claim. So it's more focused generally in a contract where here what we're on is a fraud claim mounted against a company that wrote insurance policies. So it's quite a step away. I mean, I have less trouble with specific jurisdiction. The claim that's bothering me is your blanket approach to general jurisdiction, which is what you need here for this suit to go forward, correct?
And we are talking about general jurisdiction.
Right, I know that.
And not specific jurisdiction, so I'm not certain that I understand your question.
All right, well, my question is this. I think that some of the arguments that you make could easily support specific jurisdiction. My concern is, do they support general jurisdiction because that's what you need?
And the answer is yes, they do. That's the whole point of consent. The courts.
But it's consent to what? What you're saying is when there's a, you fill out a registration statute, so you have someone on which to serve process for this corporation, you've consented to anything that you want to do to that corporation, no matter where you live, no matter at all. Anybody can pick Wisconsin and go forward against this company if they choose to.
That's correct.
Why would Wisconsin want to do that?
Well, it has done that, and that's the point. I think that's the important point, because there are jurisdictions that have limited the reach of this consent that they find within a jurisdiction statute or within a registration statute. We don't have that here. And if you look at the comments to the model code, which were referred to before, it talks about that jurisdiction extending to the extent of what the statute, the registration statute, permits. And here the registration statute is silent about additional conditions that are on it.
It Other just states says service have, of process, doesn't it?
Pardon me?
It's silent on jurisdiction. All it talks about is service of process.
It is silent on jurisdiction. So was the statute in the Aetna case. And I think the Aetna case is very important here to this particular discussion, because the statute there were two statutes at issue there. One of the statutes was the general registration statute that applied to any corporation. The other statute at issue in Aetna was the statute that applied specifically to insurers. The insurer statute did not have any condition, did not limit the reach of the jurisdiction. It didn't say, for example, only certain types of actions are covered. That limitation was in the general corporation registration statute. So there you can see that there are two different ways of doing it. Wisconsin recognized that at the time. The actual statute that we're talking about now in Chapter 180 was enacted in 1989.
Yeah,
and when the
that.
Legislature did that, it dropped that those categories that had limited the reach of the earlier statute relating to registration for corporations.
What interest does the state of Wisconsin have in permitting a foreign corporation to be sued by a California resident for actions that didn't take place in Wisconsin? That's what I have problems with.
Well, the state has an interest in, it's always expressed an interest. This court has recognized, for example, when it's interpreted the long-arm statute, that the long-arm statute is to be interpreted to the full extent permitted by the Constitution. This state has an interest in seeing to it that residents within its state have a home forum in which they can sue.
I'm talking about the California, under your argument, I could live in California and I could sue Countrywide in Wisconsin because they've filled out a registration statement, right?
You would have jurisdiction to sue them here.
Yeah.
But the legislature also, when it broadened the reach of the jurisdiction in 1960-59 or so, when it enacted the new procedure statutes, it made it clear that what it was trying to do is expand jurisdiction. And at the same time it did that, it added a safety valve by codifying the forum nonconvenience doctrine. And it said, you know, if you've got this California plaintiff who ran off the road in Alaska and comes here, well, the courts can address it at that point with that forum nonconvenience statute. But that doesn't affect jurisdiction in the first instance. So those are really two very different concepts that are being used there.
Okay.
Now where is, let's see, there are two corporations here. One is the segregated account. Where are either one of these corporations incorporated?
AMBAC is a Wisconsin domiciled insurer.
So it's using its own domicile to sue.
Yes, it's using its own domicile, and the segregated account is created under the Wisconsin statutes, and it's also considered a Wisconsin-domiciled insurer. So you have those
the hypothetical given to you is not the close to the facts here.
No, we've got two Wisconsin residents, if you will, that are trying to sue in their home state, and there's nothing odd about that at all to choose your home jurisdiction in which to bring an action. The other difficulty with Justice Rogensack, with your point, is that we do have other states, contrary to what Countrywide said, this isn't an odd interpretation of this statute at all. I mean, you've got Iowa, you've got Nebraska, you've got South Dakota, New Hampshire, the Florida Supreme Court. We've cited a series of cases at pages 14 to 15 of our brief that tell you that courts have interpreted language very similar to ours as granting that jurisdiction. So then you've got the situation
where... Well, but, you know, what they interpreted and what we believe the legislature provided in the statute that we have to interpret may or may not be the same thing, right? I mean, we have to interpret Wisconsin law with the words that the legislature gave to us. If we think they're ambiguous, then we go outside the context of the statute and we look at those things that underlay the enactment of the statute. So, you know, I appreciated your brief. All of the briefing here is actually very, very good, and the case is quite fascinating. You probably have been in it so much it may be not as fascinating to you, but to us we don't have that many really good commercial cases, so it's very interesting. But my concern is when you look at jurisdiction, there has to be an interest of the state in providing this forum, right? And if I interpret the statute as broadly as you, though AMBAC is a Wisconsin corporation, I would have to say that if I lived in California, but I happen to like cold winters, I could come here and I could sue Countrywide, right?
You could, but then you would again probably face a motion under the forum nonconvenience statute.
No, I understand your response.
Yeah, and okay. Let me finish my thought on these other jurisdictions that are surrounding us. I think the legislature... It's the legislature's prerogative to determine what's good for Wisconsin and what's good for Wisconsin's citizens.
Right.
So if you've got a situation now where our neighboring states are going to make our corporations that register there subject to general jurisdiction there, I think it's perfectly reasonable for our legislature to have concluded that it'll adopt the same interpretation and keep us on an even par with those other jurisdictions.
Okay.
What Countrywide wants to do is put our people, our corporations here at a disadvantage. And I don't think that's at all what the legislature had in mind. There's certainly no evidence of that. In fact, the evidence is to the contrary. And again, I'd go back to the Model Act. And we're talking about the meaning of the statute here. And the court has often looked to the history of the statute to prior interpretations. In this case, we've got Aetna, which is interpreting very similar language.
Mm-hmm.
The court has looked to the purpose of the statute, and these statutes traditionally had the purpose of making sure that foreign corporations were subjected to jurisdiction within the local courts. And that's reflected here in Wisconsin by the section that Justice Bradley talked about early on. That's section 180.1505. Which talks about putting foreign corporations and domestic corporations on the same footing. The domestic corporation and the foreign corporation are to have the same rights, they're to have the same privileges, they're to be subject to the same duties and liabilities. And that's what tells us, that's what helps inform the meaning that the legislature had in mind when it adopted the model language. And that model language, I think, is critical here because, as you know, the people who put together these model acts, and I think there was an effort to disparage the model act here by saying, oh, it's old. But, you know, those people spend a lot of time looking at cases. They study what's gone on in the past. They study the writing that has occurred. And they come up with what they think is a proper formulation of the law. They look at the restatement, which is something this court looked at in Punky. And I know Punky was an individual defendant, but there's a reciprocal, or there's a similar section of the restatement that deals with exactly this point. Section 44 of the current restatement deals with registration and tells us that registration confers jurisdiction. When you look at the comments, and I know, again, this court has looked at comments to the Model Act as very persuasive. And we know that the Model Act was the basis for Wisconsin statute. The Model Act comments are very clear that when a corporation registers to do business in a state, it makes itself amenable to jurisdiction. And I'd ask that you go back and look at the Aetna decision, which uses the exact same formulation. So what the Wisconsin legislature has done in carrying forward Aetna and then the comments to the model code, I think that's entitled to some deference when you're trying to figure out what the plain meaning of the statute is. Legislatures assume to know the law. And so when it used language that was well established in Wisconsin, that had a particular meaning, both in the case law and then in the restatement and then in the comments to the Model Act on which our statute is based, that needs to be taken into account in determining the meaning. And I think it's really becomes black-letter law at that point that the legislature relied on when it was enacting the statute. So I think that's very important to keep in mind.
Now, Council, you have alternative arguments, and what are we to do with them? There seems to be an issue in my mind raised as to what are the issues yet before the court or courts. On page 46 of your brief, after having discussed the consent by the registered agent general jurisdiction approach that you've just been focusing on, you say, in essence, that we brought three claims in the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals decided in our favor on one and then did not need to address the remaining two. Those remaining two include one that says, by seeking relief in the rehab proceeding, Countrywide consented to Wisconsin jurisdiction for claims brought by the segregated account in relation to policies that are part of the rehab proceeding. And then a few pages later, you have the second alternative argument, which is based on specific personal jurisdiction, that is the long-arm statute. Your opposing counsel says, no way that we're going to be addressing those issues, or at least that's what I understood the opposing counsel to be saying in its brief, that those issues in some way are raised. Perhaps you didn't read the brief that way, but I did. Regardless, what are we supposed to do with these issues?
Well, the issue was raised. We raised those two issues both when we responded to the petition for review.
Right.
And then we've again preserved them by briefing them. I know Countrywide would have liked to sweep them under the rug so it didn't brief them, but we briefed those issues. And I think that this court could take those issues up and decide them on its own. Perhaps it won't need to. It just it's easy to affirm, be in our favor, those issues go away. If the court decides not to do that, though, then I suggest that, and if it decides not to take them up on its own, then I think the appropriate thing to do would be to remand the case to the Court of Appeals so that it could address those issues. It didn't need to address them because it ruled in our favor. But I think that's the way to go with those two issues. And I'm happy to address the merits of those if you'd like me to do that now.
I'd like you to address your opposing counsel's comment referring to Brown, the Second Circuit case, and also the Court of Appeals in Delaware. It's something like CPAC, that case. They seem to stand for the premise that the train has left the station. You're relying on old law, and you reference the comment made in the Daimler case about, I'm paraphrasing, no need to give them too much heed. That's a paraphrase. So isn't that the trajectory of the law?
The train has not left the station. The train is still in the station. The old cases, I know they've been disparaged here by saying they're outdated, they're outmoded, nobody cares about them anymore. Well, I'd submit that they have not been overruled. Daimler was very careful, as was International Shoe, to make sure that it was talking only about the non-consenting defendant. We're talking about a minimum contacts analysis that has nothing to do with the situation where you involve consent. Getting to the Brown case, the Brown case dealt with the Connecticut statute, and the CPAC decision was the Delaware statute. First of all, CPAC was a divided court. The dissenting justice there pointed out that he wasn't also sure that all this constitutional analysis applied here, and he was loath to deprive the local courts of jurisdiction based on something that the Supreme Court hadn't ruled on. Both of those statutes, both of those decisions, dealt with statutes that were similar but not exactly the same as Wisconsin's. For example, the Delaware statute in the CPEC case did not include the language that Justice Bradley, you've pointed to about the duties, restrictions, penalties, and liabilities. Counsel for Countrywide said no court has interpreted that in our favor, but I beg to differ. The New Mexico Supreme Court in the Werner case interpreted that portion of the statute as being important precisely for the reasons that we've offered here, because it tells you that what the legislature was attempting to do in adopting that language and in adopting the registration statute was to place domestic corporations and foreign corporations on the same footing. So that's very important. The CPEC court never talked about that. The CPEC court never talked about the Model Act or the comments to the Model Act. So I think those are very important because they tell us exactly what this language that the Wisconsin legislature used meant, the meaning that it had at the time the legislature adopted it. The same with Brown. The Brown case is even worse because the statute in Connecticut didn't even have the same language as our section 180.1505 about the rights and privileges and duties, responsibilities of foreign corporations as compared to domestic corporations. So there was no discussion of that. And I think where both of those courts got off the rails is that they assumed that there was a constitutional problem. And if you assume there's a constitutional problem, then you're going to use a different analysis than you might otherwise because you don't really want to get into that. And that's just wrong because there is no constitutional issue here. And I go back to Pennsylvania Fire. When you've got consent, you've got an actual consent, you've got a voluntary consent, as Pennsylvania Fire pointed out, there is no constitutional due process analysis that needs to be done. It's just over.
Do you agree most of the states and jurisdictions who've dealt with this issue go against you?
No, not at all. I would refer you to page 40 of our brief, specifically footnote 18. And you'll see that there are 16 decisions that were out there that after Daimler, after International Shoe, that continue to go our way, where the courts have said, no, this is Daimler and International Shoe both made it very clear that they dealt with the non-consenting defendant. And the court has always been clear to do that. And I know counsel for Countrywide talked about how these old cases can't have a lot of weight put on them anymore. Well, I would refer you to Justice Scalia's decision in Burnham. And he talks about how the quote from the Schaffer versus Heitner case was wretched out of context. Well, that's exactly what Countrywide has done here. It's wretched that concept of these old cases can't be relied on out of context. What Justice Scalia pointed out was that the time-honored bases for jurisdiction are so well established in our jurisprudence that they were not undermined by International Shoe. And consent is a time-honored basis for jurisdiction. We see that from Pennsylvania Fire. We see that from the cases that preceded Pennsylvania Fire, like the Schollenberger case. So I think that's just a misreading and a taking out of context by Countrywide when they talk about the older cases.
Well, you cite trial court decisions that are for you. Countrywide cites courts of appeals decisions that are for it.
Well, it cites only one that actually deals with this point. I think it's the McGill case out of Colorado doesn't doesn't deal with this issue in that way. Florida Court of Appeals decision, and I think it's the Magwitch case, if I'm correct, does deal with this, but it's a pretty perfunctory discussion. And again, it's the Florida Court of Appeals. So we're talking about one. I think the analysis that was done there is not nearly as good, and I'll refer you to a decision that I think explains this very clearly, and that's the concurring opinion of Justice O'Malley in the Accorda case out of the Federal Circuit in 2016. He goes through a very careful analysis of the constitutional issues here and tells us why we've got courts making the mistake of applying the concerns that Daimler raised in the context of a non-consenting defendant to a situation where the defendant has consented. They're two very different things. Their consent jurisdiction is much different than general jurisdiction conferred under a long-arm statute, and I think you get off the rails when you mix those two together, and that's what happened in the Brown and CPEC decision.
Thank you.
I see my time is up if there are no further questions. Thank you.
Counsel, are you familiar with the Accorda decision that was just referenced? Was there a writ of cert to the Supreme Court that was denied? And was this consent issue one of the issues in the request for cert? If you know, I don't know the answer, but I was just wondering.
Accorda dealt with the Delaware statute, and I assume you're asking because the same three professors that I represent in this case, at least two of those three, filed an amicus brief.
Yes, but this one's shorter.
This one is much shorter. I hope it's better. And it deals with a different statute, not with the Delaware statute.
But was consent the issue that went to the Supreme Court? They turned down cert, I think, but do you know?
I'm not familiar with it. You're talking about the United States Supreme Court.
Yep.
I'm not familiar with what went up for cert and what was denied. But thank you for this opportunity to just make a few points on behalf of the law professors I represent, law professors who feel strongly that you do not ignore 135 years of jurisprudence because some of it is old, because it's grounded. These cases were grounded in the time frame, both the legal time frame and the industrial time frame in which they were written. You don't ignore them, as Mr. McLaughlin suggested, because they might be out of date. They're not out of date. I tried to follow the quote that counsel was using for that. I think it came from International Shoe. It was not referring to the line of cases the professors have cited. And it's a 1945 case, so it's out of date. Well, none of it's out of date until the Supreme Court of the United States tells us it's out of date. And it's not out of date because another decision comes along from the United States Supreme Court, which addresses a different issue. And so I'm here on behalf of these professors who have no stake in the interest of Wisconsin companies, which might wish to sue foreign companies in this home jurisdiction. They have no agenda with respect to the interests of foreign companies, which might wish to avoid such lawsuits. They have no concern about the policy questions that have been referenced in the briefs about whether the Court of Appeals decision will be good for Wisconsin business or not. They believe those policy questions are for the legislature. Their only interest lies in the proper development of constitutional law with respect to jurisdiction.
Do you agree there's no constitutional issue in this case?
I agree there is no constitutional, yes, I agree, there is no constitutional issue, certainly not one that arises from the Daimler decision. And that's the constitutional issue that has been raised. If there's another issue, it hasn't been raised. And the interest that we have and that the professors have is in maintaining what has been and should remain a critical distinction between the line of United States Supreme Court cases we cite that address jurisdiction by consent in the setting of business registration statutes and the line of cases that concern due process limits on long-arm jurisdictional statutes.
But we're not using the long-arm statute here, is what respondent tells us, correct?
That's exactly correct. And
so we don't have to worry about due process in the long-arm statute. I'm just trying to parse down what we're really supposed to be deciding here. I think if I can call Attorney Nider co-counsel, at least you're on the same side of the street here, and she tells us don't worry about the constitutional arguments raised on the other side. This is a statutory interpretation case. You have to do what the legislature was doing here. End of story. And then when you say due process to me, that makes my constitutional ears pop up. So I just want to know what we're talking about.
It is a statutory construction case. And if Countrywide and the amicus briefs filed on that side had a good statutory argument, had a good statutory interpretation argument, they would not have to reach for Daimler. They would not need Daimler. They are reaching for Daimler because they don't have a good statutory interpretation argument. And they're resorting to the effort to make Daimler apply where it does not apply. And while it is a significant case, it is a significant case that affects long-arm jurisdiction and related state statutes. It does not speak to the important jurisdictional issue here, which concerns consent jurisdiction, jurisdiction by consent. And so the constitutional issue that we address is whether Daimler has somehow taken away the right of the Wisconsin legislature or of any state legislature to link consent to jurisdiction with registration to do business in that state. And over a century of law has carefully established this state's right to do so, any state's right to do so. And Wisconsin has created what is a very common statutory scheme. There is simply nothing in Daimler that can be read to have taken away the right that Wisconsin had to link consent to jurisdiction to the right to do business.
Counsel, page 32 of your opposing counsel's brief says, the appeal can be resolved on grounds of statutory interpretation if this court rules consistent with the plain language of the statutes, established principles of statutory construction and Wisconsin precedent. So is it fair of you to say that there is chewing this statutory reliance and just embracing the Constitution?
When you say page 32, this would be Countrywide's brief?
Red.
Not the amicus briefs.
That's right. The opposing counsel.
Justice, if you believe that this is purely a question of statutory interpretation and that Daimler has no application here because it's a long-arm jurisdiction decision, and if the other justices agree, I would sit down. If that were the case, I don't quite understand why Countrywide has pursued the constitutional argument based on Daimler and why two amicus briefs have been filed on the other side, briefs that raise two things. One, the policy question, what's best for business in Wisconsin? And secondly, the Daimler issue, and have attempted in their briefs, along with Countrywide, to convince you that Daimler's standards. Are you headquartered here? Are you incorporated here? Are you, quote, at home here? That those are the only three considerations we have anymore. There is no consent jurisdiction anymore. There is no line of cases. At least it's been erased by Daimler sub silentio, when Daimler clearly distinguishes Perkins as being a case involving consent. And Washington Shoe equally and clearly refers to other cases that involve consent as being distinguished on a separate line of cases.
Thank
Kevin,
you, Counsel.
Chief Justice, may I ask one brief question that should elicit a yes or no answer?
Counsel, if we would accept Countrywide's interpretation, the legislature could disagree with us and simply add into Chapter 180 that there is consent to jurisdiction via foreign registration. Could they not?
I have to answer yes or no?
No.
Yes. Absolutely yes. But absolutely yes, if you accept the Court of Appeals decision, the legislature is equally free to undo what it seems to have clearly done for many decades, and pass a law, perhaps adopting a newer model law that many states have adopted, that make it clear in those states that registration does not include submission to general jurisdiction. So the legislature is free to do what it wants to do and should be left to do what it's entitled to do.
Thank you.
To return to first principles, this case is
Counsel,
about...
I want to just follow up just what was said. Are you familiar with the Uniform Law Commission's uniform... No, I'm talking about your question to you.
You're
yes.
properly
That's right.
at
I'm
the
sorry.
Podium.
Are you familiar with the Uniform Law Commission's uniform law on this issue, which suggests that if legislatures do not want registration to be deemed consent to jurisdiction, that they then they have a model law, the Uniform Law Commission has a model law giving the words to put in your legislation to effectuate. Are you familiar with that?
I confess I'm not, Your Honor.
Okay.
There is no Wisconsin statutory rule that registration equals consent. AMBAC confirmed the absence of one in the courts below by admitting that no Wisconsin decision before this one ever addressed whether business registration equals consent. Interestingly, counsel just said a moment ago that Perkins v. Benjouet was the paradigm of consent. The Supreme Court actually said that was the decision where that's the one paradigm where the defendant did not consent. So I just wanted to make sure that was clearly understood. Briefly on the Aetna decision and its relation to the Court of Appeals decision. As Your Honors are familiar with the Court of Appeals decision, apparently even AMBAC recognizes that the Punky and Hasley decisions don't support the Court of Appeals decision. It makes no real effort to defend the ruling under those cases. And its proposed substitute, Aetna v. Fowler, which was not cited by the Court of Appeals, is equally off point, and it really spotlights the extent of the grasp by AMBAC. Aetna actually concerned what this court called a, quote, special law, sounds like 805.202, unique to the regulation of foreign insurers. And this court said that the important business of life and fire insurance is so charged with the public interest that it is subject to reasonable state regulations. That special law was a statute, not common law, section 201.38, which Aetna said clearly put the Foreign Insurance Corporation outside of the general foreign corporation statute, which for all other non-insurer foreign corporations allowed jurisdiction only where there was service plus Wisconsin contacts. So Aetna simply enforced the foreign insurer statute as written and rejected the argument properly that jurisdiction over foreign corporations also required in-state contacts. And by the way, Aetna's been cited four times in almost 100 years, and never since 1947, and not surprisingly, has never been interpreted anywhere as suggesting that appointment of a process agent suggests a foreign corporation is subject to general jurisdiction here.
Do you think it's fair to say they don't rely on, they do rely on Aetna, but they also rely on Punky and Hasley?
Yes.
I think the insurance cases.
Half-heartedly they do, and I don't blame them because Punky didn't even address personal jurisdiction, only whether service on a purported agent of a non-resident individual defendant was valid personal service.
Yes,
that's a distinction that just mentioned the Burnham decision.
Consent. They focused on the consent jurisdiction.
Right, and they determined that there was not consent. But the important distinction here is that the two restatement provisions that are cited by Punky pertain to classic just I consent, here's my express consent, and it says it very clearly. What's not mentioned in the decision, and the court completely overlooked it, and we cite it in our brief, is section 44 of the restatement conflict of laws, which addresses this question of whether a corporation has consented to personal jurisdiction by appointing a registered agent. And that section says, in conformity with our view, that you have to look, you know, common sense, you have to look at what the statute says. And that's why you have got a statute like Pennsylvania, which says, I consent to general jurisdiction. There's less controversy around that. Turning briefly back to Daimler, I think that nobody did a better job than Judge Anderson in pointing out the irreconcilability of Daimler and registration equals consent. He said, if you have to register to do business in states, then if you want to do business in 50 states, you've got to register in 50 states. If that means consent, then you're subject to jurisdiction everywhere. And he said that's entirely opposite to Daimler. And the Second Circuit didn't do any better, even though they had more time and the help of law clerks. But as they put it, they said if a state could require a corporation to register in order to transact business and then deem registration implied consent to general jurisdiction, Daimler would be robbed of meaning by a backdoor thief. As they said, it would allow states to achieve exactly the, quote, exorbitant exercise of all-purpose jurisdiction that Daimler rejected. And permitting that end run would make Daimler a dead letter. It's worth pointing out, actually, that there is another – I see my time is up.
If you can conclude briefly.
I just wanted to point out that, as the Delaware Supreme Court noted in the Brown CPIC case, there is a unconstitutional conditions argument that is equally compelling a reason why you cannot deem implied consent in this situation. I just recommend that the court take a look at the Delaware Supreme Court's decision on the unconstitutional conditions doctrine.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you all for wonderful arguments. You are really good oralists, all of you. So it was a treat to have these arguments because you actually responded to our questions. So often when you ask a question or an argument, what you get back is a rephrasing of what you've already read in the briefs that were filed. So thank you very much. The arguments are a real treat, and we will give it careful attention. We are adjourned.